We'll now look into online voting, the pros, the cons and the fish hooks. IT professional Stephen Judd has worked in the industry for 25 years, starting as a programmer, also working as a business analyst and a project manager. He's contributed to a new book, Shouting Zeros and Ones, Digital Technology, Ethics and Policy in New Zealand, to tell us about his chapter on online voting, titled Solutions Have Problems. Kia ora, Stephen. Morning.
Hi.
How are you?
Good morning. Well, not so bad. I'm laid up with my feet up because I broke my leg 3 weeks ago. But it's coming along nicely.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm sorry to hear
that.
I hope someone's delivering you a cup of tea or something for the interview. Look, I'm really interested in more on your background and what it is that's brought you to a particular expertise and interest in this question of online voting.
So in the beginning, I was one of those kids whose parents had a microcomputer in the 80s, and I taught myself to program. And in the 90s, I dropped out of university, and I got into the industry. And I kind of studied computer science as well as having taught myself, and worked in a startup and did some security work on internet banking. But in the last few years, coincidentally, I've also been involved in the Labor Party and through that been involved in managing local government election campaigns and even in one election, an electorate campaign. So I'm really interested in the sort of intersection of IT and the electoral process and also, as it started to become a kind of popular topic to talk about, got quite interested in how the sort of popular discourse around it doesn't line up very well with the evidence from the disciplines that you'd think would inform it, which is computer science and IT on the one hand and political science on the other. That's kind of how I got into it.
It's interesting you mention the local government because the one time we got close to having a trial of online voting, a pilot, was local government elections. What happened?
Very briefly, what happened in the first go-round is that local governments were invited to run a trial which they would have to fund, and some of them decided, or an attempt was made to put together a consortium of them to fund that jointly. But some of those local governments, notably Christchurch City Council, got cold feet about participating in that trial. And then the other thing is that the Department of Internal Affairs had actually set up criteria for the standards that a trial should meet, and it wasn't clear that the proposed solutions would meet those standards. So between those two things, the trial just didn't go ahead. More recently, shortly before the last local government elections, there was another attempt for this to happen, and there was a tender through the New Zealand government's electronic tender system. And I think there was actually a successful bid, but the problem is the bid that met the criteria was extremely expensive, such that local government just couldn't afford it.
Okay.
So it just fell over on cost.
Let's talk about, very quickly talk about the rationale for, before we talk about the problems, because one of the obvious rationales for is low participation by certain groups, and particularly certain age groups. I think it was just last week, the figures came out. At the moment, only 63% of 18 to 24-year-olds are enrolled for this coming election. Last election, as I understand it, 69% of those who were involved in that age group actually voted. So if it were a similar figure enrolled last year, you're only looking at about 42% of 18 to 24-year-olds voting. Is that the driver? Is the driver that, whether or not it should be, they are so attuned, some generations and some cohorts are so attuned to doing everything online that the idea of walking to the local hall on a Saturday morning and picking up an orange felt pen is a barrier? Is that the main argument?
It's certainly an argument that you hear in popular discussion of it, although noticeably the reasons that officials and other people advance are more around cost and efficiency. But the thing is, like, that is a really common sense intuitive argument, but it turns out there's not really very much evidence for it. In fact, our own electoral commission, after every election, does a lot of work to go, how did this election go? Did we do a good job? And they try and find out, they ask people why they don't vote. Similarly, Auckland City Council did that quite recently. When you look at the reasons people give for not voting, it's mostly things like, I don't know about the candidates, I don't think it would make a difference, I can't be bothered. They're really typically answers that speak to a lack of engagement, not about difficulty.
There's another point you make there before I want you to run through, please, what the IT concerns are. But the interesting point is talking about local government participation, it's very low. It ranges from the late 30s to the early 40s. Some get over 50%. Often smaller regional districts get over 50%, but it's really low. But it uses this postal voting system where someone says, and some people admit to, I sit down, I fill out my son's voting forms and off they go for local government level. So I suppose the argument is, if we're going to start talking about security and validity of votes and outcomes, isn't it already a bit of a bit borderline when it comes to how we vote in local government elections?
Kind of, but kind of not. And the reason I say kind of not is that paper systems are insecure and problematic at an individual level, like someone steals an envelope or even a handful of envelopes, but centralised online systems can fail all at once, right? You can get control of the whole system and affect all the votes. So they're not really comparable in that way. I guess the other thing is that while it's certainly possible that people interfere with the postal voting system, there really is, again, there's a lack of evidence that that happens at scale. So it's a bit more theoretical than a real proposition.
What are the IT issues that you raise with what, on the face of it, and as you said, intuitively feels like a logical thing to do in 2020, which is to vote online?
Yeah.
What are the specific matters that many lay people simply would not think of?
Well, one obvious one is that while the system might be secure in terms of the centralised system, the tools that you use to access it may not be. Lots of people don't have up-to-date, well-patched computers. Lots of people with smartphones, their smartphone hasn't had an update in several years. So if the device that you use to access the system is vulnerable, the whole system is vulnerable. Another big issue is it's been shown with systems that are in place and in production overseas, even quite well-known ones, that it's theoretically possible to update the counts without tampering. To tamper with the counts without leaving evidence. And that's really problematic for the legitimacy of an election. If someone shows there's a way to tamper in an undetectable way, it's very hard to go, no, that didn't happen, because they've already shown that you can do that without leaving evidence. I think the third thing that's really interesting is that just by nature, very large-scale IT projects are high-risk projects, and elections have a very high standard for failure versus non-failure, and they have to happen on a particular date. And if they go wrong, you know, rerunning them immediately afterwards is already really problematic. So the stakes are really different for an election as an IT project, an IT project to deliver an election system than many other kinds of systems that we're used to using.
We used the census online. There was an issue with the response rate, but was there any issue with its validity, reliability, security from the information that was fed in?
Only to, as far as I'm aware, mostly to the extent that the response rate was low. So people who need accurate statistics about smaller groups in our population couldn't get them.
But the actual IT component of doing it all online and not on paper, there were no issues raised around, again, security or...
There was a small oversight, so tracking code that was sending data back to a third party for analytics was accidentally left in that system, and that was slightly worrying.
Actually, is anonymity another issue with online voting? Is there...
Absolutely. I mean, in the paper system, you get issued a voting paper, and after the election, if there were a problem, it might be possible to track back a particular voting paper to a particular voter. But, as it stands, your vote's anonymous It's a kind of after-the-fact, one-by-one process to try and sort that out. But in an online system, yeah, you pretty much have to tie the vote cast to voter identity for audit process, for audit purposes. And again, once you have a centralised system that does that, to do a lot is as easy as to do one.
A final question, because what you seem to be flagging the most is a risk of a mass hack, if you like, rather than what's, well, a combined mass hack, rather than an individual hack of, as I said, the example where mum filled out son's voting papers, which we know have happened because people have admitted it on television. That's one kind of hack in small letters. But the idea that there could be a mass interference would be the issue. I'm curious that we get amazing results every election night from the Electoral Commission almost in real time. I mean, we know the final result now by mid-evening. And again, presumably the inputs have come from paper and pen, but all that process and collating and reporting is done via computer and online. Is there any kind of issue around security and accuracy and validity of that?
It's not, in theory, yes, but it's much smaller because a system like that doesn't have to be exposed to the outside world to a huge number of users with a huge number of devices. It's essentially in-house and much smaller in scope. So, I mean, yeah, you're right. But also, actually, the other thing is the paper's still there. In the very unlikely event that were to happen, it's still auditable, and a High Court judge and a couple of decent citizens could theoretically put the whole thing to rights. And that's a much different proposition than having a couple of technical experts argue their case that's really, really difficult for the average citizen to understand.
You sound like you're opposed for the reasons you've given. In principle, would you like to see it become possible?
Well, I think there's one argument and one voice that's very rarely heard that deserves to be heard a lot more, which is that of disabled people. Particularly if you're blind or partially sighted, if you want to vote, you need somebody else's help, so you lose the anonymity, and you have to trust them to record what that they recorded your vote accurately. And I think there's a real justice argument for serving those citizens who can't use the paper process. And I guess in principle, I'm always open to the possibility that a reliable and safe system could exist. My main point is that it's not like transposing a paper system. It's not like just taking the paper system and making it online, and that it's a really difficult and expensive process. So if we're looking for cost savings, if we're looking for the kinds of outcomes that people claim, I think we'll be waiting a long time.
Thank you, Stephen. Stephen Judd. His chapter, Solutions Have Problems, is contained in a new book, Shouting Zeros and Ones, Digital Technology, Ethics and Policy in New Zealand, which I think may be the latest BWB text. I apologise if I am wrong, but I think that is the publisher.